is Peter Johnson introducing the Catholic Heritage Program broadcasting from England, bringing you traditions, trips, and information from our Catholic past and inspiration for our Catholic future. The history of France is rich in extraordinary stories, but perhaps none more unusual than that of the Empress Eugenie, wife of Louis Napoleon. He ruled briefly in the middle of the 19th century, but was deposed and, after a last-minute escape from France, ended up in England. The couple settled at Chislehurst in Kent, where Joanna Bogle has been to take up the story.
The village of Chislehurst is a very pleasant place about half an hour out of London on the train heading south, in Kent. And I'm standing here in the churchyard of St. Mary's Catholic Church. It's absolutely charming scene, quiet graves, birds singing, and yet we're really only half an hour from central London. This particular church has got an absolutely fascinating history, not because of its particular importance in Chislehurst as such, but because of its links with a forgotten empress, Empress Eugenie, married to Napoleon III of France. Their son, the Prince Imperial, was killed in the service of the British Army in Africa. It's an intriguing story as to why an empress of Irish birth who was married to a French king spent part of her life in this little village of Chislehurst and left a great deal of the history of that saga here in this little country church. In a minute, I'm going to be speaking to the parish priest, Father Charles Briggs. But just while I'm waiting for Father Charles, I'm walking around the churchyard here and looking at some of the graves that tell the history of the parish. A good many Irish names, of course. Many Irish people settled in Britain in the 19th century. And here's one grave with an Irish name that's a tragic and intriguing story. This grave is in memory of our lost darling, Claude Sophie O'Shea, born 15th of February, 1882, died at dawn, 21st of April, 1882, erected by her father and mother, one of many Victorian children who died when only a few months old. But this little baby O'Shea was the product of the scandalous union between Kitty O'Shea and Charles Parnell, the politician. Charles Stuart Parnell had to resign in disgrace when the affair became known. But something that I'd never known was that there was a little child of that union. And here she is, buried in this little country churchyard in Chislehurst, a very sad part of a bit of history that I remember doing at school. And here comes Father Charles.
Good morning, Joanna.
Oh, hello, Father. Well, it's absolutely fascinating, this little church here. How long have you been parish priest here?
I've been parish priest here about 6 months.
Well, I want to hear the story about the Empress. Tell me about her.
Well, she was the Empress Eugenie, and she lived with her husband, Napoleon III, in the parish here at Chislehurst, and their son, and they all came and worshipped here during the 19th century, after their exile from France. But perhaps we'd like to go and have a look in the church.
I'd love to. I really want to hear this story.
Here we are, coming into the church now.
Oh, it's absolutely charming building, isn't it? I love this stained glass.
Yes, it's beautiful stained glass. A lot of it is quite old, in fact. The church goes back to 1851, 1852.
So it wasn't built by the Empress and her husband. It was already standing when they settled in this village.
It was already standing. And the interesting thing is that the foundation stone was laid on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, and it's dedicated to Our Lady of the Immaculate Conception. And you can see the beautiful stained glass window open.
Well, now we've moved into the Lady Chapel at one side of the church, and this is really where we see evidence of the story of Napoleon III and the Empress. So over to you, Father.
He was Napoleon, the nephew of the great Napoleon I, and he moved to Chislehurst after the end of the Franco-Prussian War, and in fact died in Chislehurst in 1873. And we're looking down now on this piece of marble, which says, on this spot rested for many years the remains of Napoleon III. There was a great sarcophagus put here, which is now at Farnborough Abbey, where Napoleon III, in fact, was buried. And the Empress was very distraught course, of the death of her husband, and built this side chapel onto the existing church. And the existing church was a very small, little church, which attracted largely Irish working class people. And as I said, it's completed in a very short period of time, just 9 months. And then once the Emperor and the Empress had moved to Chislehurst, the clientele, as it were, of the church completely changed, and it became a very fashionable place to come to Mass. And hence it was embellished. And this chapel, being an example of that, put up by the Empress, but obviously very greatly revered by the people who lived around here.
So the Emperor and Empress had to flee France in the wake of the Franco-Prussian War.
That's right, exactly, in the wake of the Franco-Prussian War. And they arrived here shortly afterwards, came to Chislehurst in 1871, Napoleon III.
And they had what, their little boy with them then, or was he already grown up,
they
their
had,
son?
Their son was grown up. He was born in the 1850s, but he came with them and lived to move to Chislehurst Place, which is now the golf club, funnily enough, but he came with them. And his tomb is also in the church, although his body, once more, is at Farnborough Abbey.
So they lived here, transformed Chislehurst from being a rather poor little Catholic parish to being the smart place to go to Mass because you saw the Emperor.
That's right. You saw the Emperor, you saw the Empress, and you saw the Prince Imperial. And in fact, on the morning before he set out for his final journey, when he went out with the British soldiers in the Zulu Wars, he received Holy Communion here on his last morning here in the parish.
Well, that's rather a nice story. I knew a little bit about the fact that the Prince Imperial was killed in Africa fighting with the British army because he was trained at Sandhurst, a military academy at Sandhurst, where my husband also trained, and there's a memorial to him in the grounds at Sandhurst. Yes. There.
And there's also one in the village to him as well, to the Prince Imperial. His godfather, of course, was Pius IX, who is soon to be beatified, so that is rather a nice story.
That's rather an intriguing link, and a sad story too, that he died as a young soldier in the service of the British Army, with which he had no real link.
No, that's right. He adopted Britain very much as his home, although he was from this Napoleonic family. We can see in the floor here the links in this chapel with the Napoleonic, with the eagle there, and the great N on the floor here, on the floor top.
Yes, an N surmounted by a crown, and then this eagle surmounted in red. It's rather magnificent. And so this whole chapel was built by the Emperor and Empress?
Yeah, well, for the Empress, for the remains of the Emperor.
I see. And why was the actual sarcophagus eventually moved to Farnborough? What's the story? Why did they all leave Chislehurst?
Well, the story is that the monument to the Prince Imperial, which we can have a look at in a minute, which is actually in the church, was erected without the permission of the Empress. And the Empress did not like that at all. And so the Empress decided to leave Chislehurst very shortly after the Prince Imperial's death in 1879. And so she left Chislehurst very quickly after that and moved to Farnborough. And she moved to a house called Farnborough Hill House, which became a Catholic girls' school. And she built her own monastery there, her monastery being Farnborough Monastery. And the monks there were monks that originally came from France, and so her house looked over the monastery, and so she could continue to pray and worship there. And she removed the bodies of the Prince Imperial and Napoleon III to Farnborough, and she herself is buried in the sarcophagus at Farnborough Abbey.
That's just a few miles away in another county across. That's in Surrey.
Exactly, and not that far from Sandhurst, in fact, of course.
That's right, of course, in the military district in Surrey, that's right.
If we look on the wall here, we will see a photograph of the original sarcophagus, which is now at Farnborough Abbey. And as you can see, it is a very, very large sarcophagus indeed.
Very grand, and it says here, the tomb in which the Emperor's body was laid was of red Aberdeen granite and was the gift of Queen Victoria. So tell me, where does Queen Victoria fit into the picture? Did she ever come here?
Queen Victoria was with the Emperor, the Empress during the Prince Imperial's funeral because she was so distraught. There was a great following for the Emperor amongst the English court because they felt their duty bound to support a monarch who they felt had been unseated due to Republican forces in France, and therefore they felt very, very sorry for him. And he said that she watched the funeral cortege from one of the cottages in the street around here.
Very exciting for the cottager, having the Queen Victoria in his sitting room.
The cottages were in fact owned by Queen Victoria's, by the Empress Eugenie at the time, so they're...
Would that be because Queen Victoria couldn't come into a Catholic church to watch the funeral?
Exactly, because she couldn't, as a Protestant monarch, come into a Catholic church. And it's ironic, really, that they became very close friends, and the Empress remained friends with the Queens right up until her death in 1920, when she was a very old lady indeed.
So the story of the Empress Eugenie, which starts effectively in the Franco-Prussian War, ends in 1920 in really comparatively modern times.
Yes, in Farnborough, in Hampshire.
In Farnborough, in Hampshire. What an intriguing little story. Now here we are in the main church again, by this rather marvellous monument to the Prince Imperial. A complete tomb-like monument in which he lies in the uniform of a British officer with his sword by his side and his hands clasped in prayer. And what does this this plaque here carved in the stone say, Father?
Well, this beautiful monument, as you said, to the Prince Imperial who died in the Zulu Wars, as I mentioned, at the age of only 23, the plaque says, "To the pious, noble, chivalrous Louis Napoleon, Prince Imperial of France, who fell in England's cause on January 1st, 1879. This monument is erected by his faithful servant and friend, the Right Reverend Monsignor Goddard, rector of this parish."
So there's this permanent monument here, and again with the Napoleonic N and the eagle. And what is this story about the prayer they found in the prince's own prayer book when he was killed?
This prayer was composed by the prince and found in his own handwriting in his private prayer book. And it says, "My God, I give you my heart. Do you give me faith? Without faith, there can be no fervent prayer, and prayer is necessary to my soul. Do not take away, I pray you, the obstacles that stand in my path, but give me opportunity to overcome them. Do not disarm my enemies, but help me to conquer myself."
Churches built by Spanish people in other countries, for example chapels attached to Spanish embassies, are often dedicated to St. James. That accounts for the unusual history of one particular church in London. Joanna Bogle has been there to find out about it.
Most Catholic Londoners have heard of the Church of St. James in Spanish Place. It's well worth a visit. And although the building that stands there now only dates from the 19th century, the history goes a lot further back. If you want to look for the Church of Spanish Place, you have to start by knowing that it's not strictly speaking in Spanish Place at all, but round the corner in George Street. It's in a quiet area, not far from the bustling shopping districts of Oxford Circus and Oxford Street, and not far too from Baker Street, where the legendary Sherlock Holmes is supposed to have lived. You'll find the Church of St. James's Spanish Place on the corner of George Street, a magnificent Gothic building. And Spanish Place itself is the square which juts out from George Street. The history goes right back to penal times. During the reign of Elizabeth I, and for many years later, Catholics were forbidden to practice their religion in Britain. And the only way they could go to Mass, in London at least, was to find the embassy of a foreign country and attend Mass in its private chapel. This was the case with the Spanish embassy, the Portuguese embassy, and many other countries. Once inside the chapel, the English Catholic was on foreign soil and immune from arrest. This situation went on for a very long while, and many of the priests who were ordained to serve these foreign embassy chapels knew perfectly well that they were, in effect, serving the needs of English Catholics in the London area as well. In the reign of Charles II, the Spanish embassy was established on Ormond Street and then later moved to Hertford House in nearby Manchester Square. In 1791, shortly after the first repeal of some of the laws affecting Catholic worship, a chapel was built on the corner of Spanish Place and Charles Street, that's what's now called George Street, largely through the efforts of Dr. Thomas Hussey, who'd been a chaplain at the embassy since his ordination in 1769. We owe a lot to Dr. Hussey, because it was he who established the parish which we now know as St. James's Spanish Place. But we almost didn't have him as an active priest. A deeply spiritual man, he wrote to the renowned abbot of La Trappe, saying that he wanted to become a Trappist monk and devote his days to solitude and prayer. But he was told, no, you must go and minister to English Catholics and establish for them, as you have already begun to do, a proper centre of worship. It was beginning to be clear that the days of persecution might be numbered and that better times might, just might, be on their way. Well, he did establish a parish, and very much later on, when the laws against Catholics were finally repealed, a great church was able to be built. In the year 1827, the official Spanish connection with the chapel ceased, and it was handed over to the London Vicarate. That meant that it came strictly, freely, within the jurisdiction of English Catholics. And full Catholic emancipation was in the air. It was going to be possible, as the 19th century opened, to live a normal life as a Catholic Londoner. Well, as we go into the church, the first thing that strikes us is the magnificence of these soaring Gothic arches and the gleam of the chancel. It has a beautiful altar frontal, and on one side of the main altar is the Golden Lady, a particularly magnificent statue of Our Lady Queen of Heaven. Recently regilded, it actually dates back to the 19th century and was made locally by a stonemason in 1840. It's only the second statue of Our Lady to be erected in a London church after the Reformation. There's also a beautiful war memorial and a whole altar dedicated to praying for the dead of the two world wars, a martyr's altar honouring the English martyrs. As you find in most London Catholic churches, there's always a memorial to the martyrs of the Reformation era, a lady chapel, and right up here in the chancel, hanging right up towards the altar steps, are the coat of arms of the royal family of Spain. This was actually a gift from King Alfonso and Queen Ina of Spain. Queen Ina was, of course, a granddaughter of England's Queen Victoria, and converted to Catholicism on her marriage to the King of Spain. They worshipped here together when they were in England, and they donated this beautiful coat of arms because it hangs above where they would sit when they were in church. One of the great features about this church is that it's got a very English style. It's something of the feeling of Salisbury Cathedral about these soaring Gothic arches. Although in the chancel, where it comes alive in a gleam of mosaic and colour and stained glass, it has something more of a French feeling about it. There are also a number of side chapels, some of which I've mentioned. There's also a Sacred Heart altar, a St. Joseph's altar, and there are other features of the church, like a very splendid pulpit. Because this is a famous church with a long history, it was actually originally built, as I've indicated, in the 19th century, consecrated only late in the 20th century, because you have to pay for a church before it can be fully consecrated, and this was all delayed by the Second World War, so it was only finally consecrated in 1949. But because it's a famous church, a number of well-known people have been associated with it over the years, and if you go through the church records, you'll find all sorts of fascinating snippets of Catholic history. And so now, here I am, looking at some of the extracts from the church records, which actually date back to the middle of the 18th century. They go right back to 1732. Most of the archives of the old Spanish chapel have gone to Spain, but the church does preserve the baptismal and marriage registers. And here are some rather interesting extracts from those. Here we are in the 19th century. 1865, 11th of October, A baby was baptized Mary del Val. That was the future cardinal, Mary del Val, who'd been born the previous day, 10th of October 1865, baptized here by Edward Hearn. Cardinal Mary del Val was to play a major part in overcoming the modernist crisis in the church in the late 19th, early 20th century. Here we are a couple of years later, 1867, 19th of September 1867, marriage of Louis Belloc to Elizabeth Rayner Parks, daughter of Joseph Parks. Now, they went on to become the parents of the writer Hilaire Belloc. And if you come right into the 20th century, you have a number of interesting people getting married in this church, and here's one that's interesting, Vivian Hartley. She was later to be much better known as the actress Vivian Lee, and she married Lee Homan at this church in 1932, 20th of December 1932. And from the burial registers, the famous ballet dancer Nijinsky was buried from this church 14th of April 1950, Vaclav Nijinsky. St. James's Spanish Place is a very busy London church, serving not only the people that live in this part of London, but particularly during the week and at lunchtime masses during the week, the people who work in offices and shops around here. There's a lunchtime mass every weekday, and there are lunchtime confessions. And on Sundays there's a beautiful choir which sings at a Latin high mass. So it's a church which very much keeps up the old traditions of being a place of real interest and importance in the centre of London, and also serving Catholics who live and work here. If you want to visit St. James's Church Spanish Place, the nearest tube station is Baker Street on the Bakerloo line. It's easy to find because the tube station is decorated with pictures showing Sherlock Holmes, and for Catholics it's easy to remember that the part of London that gave us Sherlock Holmes is also the part of London that is in the parish of St. James's Church in Spanish Place.
We hope that you've enjoyed this look at some of our Catholic heritage. There'll be more next time, so we hope you'll join us then. If you have any comments or snippets of history or information, do write to me, Peter Johnson, at Catholic Heritage, EWTN, Global Catholic Radio, 1500 High Road, Vandiver, that's V-A-N-D-I-V-E-R, Alabama, USA, 35176. Or you can email us at radio@ewtn.com.